What's going on, RBL Nation? Welcome back to another episode. Jess, Jonathan, and Musab here today. Unfortunately, Carter abandoned us, doesn't want to talk after that brutal loss that, I won't say brutal, heartbreaking loss that USF had in the tournament a week ago. But Mr. Musab Tariq, how are you doing today?
So far, so good, Jonathan. Yeah, obviously, hate to see it, and you know there's also some other stuff to unpack as well, you know, with the basketball teams. Mm-hmm. But the good news is that, you know, there's always you know, some other athletics to soften the wound. So yeah, man, always excited every single week to talk about some USF athletics, man, because as always, there's always something going on. There literally is no off season.
Yeah, there is never a dull moment, but we will get to the departure and all the stuff like that and who USF hired. Everything moved very swiftly in the process. But first, let's talk about the game. Let's just wrap up the season. So obviously USF lost 83-79 to Louisville. It was a crazy game. They got down 23, and I was pretty confident. I'm pretty sure they're down 10 at halftime, and USF was not shooting well from three at all. That's kind of their bread and butter, and I kind of felt a comeback was going to come. It was just too little too late. I mean, Joseph Pinion was unreal. I mean, he had 27 points, five threes. I really liked how he attacked the basket too. You could just tell after the game he was gassed. You know, he gave everything he had. But is there anything specific that you saw, why USF stumbled, you know, and, you know, just the agonizing kind of feeling that it's just so sudden that the season's over, you know?
Yeah. You could just say, you know, we should have played a better game. But, you know, I think, you know, this was, first of all, we have to give credit to Louisville. I mean, this is a straight up real good team. The best probably competition we faced. Maybe I'll throw in Alabama in there in the beginning of the season. But no, man, you know, we did what we could. Obviously, there were some things like, you know, Wes Enos, you know, being kind of cold for the most part, that, you know, that kind of hurt. But, you know, it was nice to see us fighting back, but, you know, only so much you can do. I just think, you know, perhaps we just didn't make the right adjustments. You know, we're known to be very fast paced, and I think, you know, we saw that a lot, and I just think it just wasn't working out. You know, I feel like, you know, if that's something that, you know, has been working, but you come to this kind of real good team, you know, you got to be able to know that, hey, chances are they're going to pick up on this. We're going to have to adjust. So that was just the big thing. On top of that, hey, you know, they're missing one of their star players. So who knows, you know, what kind of game that could have been. But for us to come back from that, you know, 23 point, you know, kind of a deficit, and then just down to four in the last few seconds, that was real big. I want to give them a shout out, you know, with the defensive pressure. We forced 22 turnovers, racked up 15 steals. And then on top of that, yeah, new program record with 79 points in an NCAA tournament game. So, yeah, man, I think there was, you know, some highs to, you know, run with that. You know, we're the conference champions. We won the regular season and in the postseason. We went against a real good team as well. So, yeah, man, here's to better things. But, yeah, man, what are your thoughts overall? And I kind of wanted to kind of just see, you know, or, you know, kind of transition from, you know, the game to what's next, you know, for this USF basketball team.
Yeah, to speak on the game for 1 second, it's pretty simple kind of what happened. It's Joseph Pinion had five threes. The rest of the team had zero threes. And, you know, you said Wes Enos wasn't very good. He was awful. He'll be the first one to tell you. I mean, he played his worst game of the season. And I wasn't even anything Louisville did because he was just missing open shots he made all year. But, you know, you can't be too critical of the guy that's basically led you there. He was the best player for the majority of the year. The feeling out process really stood out to me. I mean, Isaiah Nelson was really overwhelmed in the first 7 minutes of the game. And then he got his footing, and then he really took over the game in the last 12 minutes. So that adjustment period took a little bit longer than I thought it would for them. And then once they figured it out, they were off and running, you know, forcing, like you said, 23 turnovers, and they had under 10 turnovers. If you just would have showed me that, I would have thought they would have won. And then you show me 5 of 33 from 3. I mean, that's like historically bad to shoot that. I mean, you know, that's missing like 28 threes.
It makes you think, what, you know, what do you think makes a team, you know, keep on trying?
It's their DNA. That's how they've been all year.
Yeah.
Enos going 0 of 11, obviously, it's tough, but he's also had games where he's made 7 threes. And, you know, he had a few contested ones that he put up at the end, but there were some he missed that was wide open. And, you know, you expect those to go in 40% of the time. And it just happens. It happens. You're playing in a hockey rink, you know, a hockey arena, a place you've never been before. You know, a lot of people talk about the overinflated balls at the tournament. A ton of stuff goes into it. And like we said, it's so sudden. You have one bad game and that's it. And USF had one bad game shooting from three. And then all of a sudden, that's it.
And it's the pressure as well, I think. You know, we're not a program known to be coming, you know, to the NCAA tournament. And again, facing such an established program. And yeah, kind of game day jitters, you know, just, you know, even feeling a teeny bit off can really throw you off.
Yeah, and it's tough because it feels like a missed opportunity because USF was Sweet 16 good. They were good enough to be playing this weekend, which is tough. But, you know, they fought back. That was an impressive thing. They never gave up. And for a second there, you think they're really going to come back. And then, you know, Louisville hit 13 threes. That's about, you know, if you're just going to circle one part of the game, it's 13 threes to 5 made threes. And it kind of wraps up from there. But it was just a tremendous season for USF. I mean, just football and basketball are just two dream seasons. I won't say dream because a dream season for football probably in the college football playoff. But from where they were, like we talked about 4 or 5 years ago to now, it's just tremendous the steps that this program has taken. But when a mid-major like USF has success, it comes with consequences, unfortunately. And if Brian Hodgson has left USF to go to Providence. I'm shocked it's not Syracuse, to be honest. The reports where he was offered the job and chose Providence. And he's a New York kid. So that kind of surprised me. It speaks to, I think, the level of commitment that Providence has. And, you know, these schools that only have basketball, Providence is a football team, they get all the rep sharing, all the resources go into basketball. But, you know, we can get more of that conversation, you know, later. But what are your thoughts on him leaving?
You know, to me, it just, you can't blame the guy. You know, he's on to better things. I have to say, you know, the way I see it, we were a stepping stone, you know, in his journey. And I think it's not really anyone's fault that we stood as that. That's just the way he turned it around, honestly, real quick. You know what I'm saying? This was his kind of, you know, I don't want to say debut moment, but maybe this was his, you know, kind of debut season, saying, okay, look at this guy. You know, he had a great season with his team in 1 year. He changed things around. And that USF team, they went real far. Now he's going to, you know, be, you know, now part of a bigger established program like Providence. So I don't blame the guy. But then again, it sucks, man. Just because, you know, a coach is thriving with us, it doesn't mean, you know, you have to leave. And I looked into it a little bit now, and please, you know, tell me, you know, how much you know with the whole kind of contract situation. It's kind of like he has to kind of buy out the contract or something, or
no, he doesn't. Providence will.
Providence would do. Yeah. They're gonna buy out the contract. So, yeah, man. In that case, what's the point of contracts then? You know, if we're just gonna be buying each other out. You know, big banks just gonna take a little bank all the time. Mm-hmm.
USF is, they're in a really interesting spot because they're not going to a power conference anytime soon. As unfortunate as that is, how tough that is to hear for you know, USF fans, they're not going to the Big Ten. They're not going to the SEC. They're not going to the Big 12. Not anytime soon. So until that happens, coaches are going to keep leaving, as unfortunate as it is. And, you know, USF doesn't have the resources that Providence does. Now, does USF have a great NIL program and resources for an American team? Absolutely. They're probably one of the best mid-majors in that department. But, you know, unfortunately for where USF's at right now, this is going to be the norm. You know, it's kind of that last step to that high major job. And I have it sourced that he loved USF. He loved being here. So Providence must have assured him multiple things to allow him to go. I mean, they must have told him that their roster next year was probably going to be over $8 million in NIL. I would have to guess for him to go because, I mean, like I said, he loved USF. He loved it here. His family loved it here. His kids loved it here. So he was all about coming back, you know, and we've seen we see the St. Louis coach coming back for another year. We've seen these mid-major coaches kind of re-sign and get those commitments. And so it just shows that, look, Providence offered what USF doesn't have. And as much as that sucks, it's a little bit easier to stomach that he didn't just leave for like a lateral job, if that makes sense. You know, he really did love it here. And I think Providence is very much committed to winning in the ways that you have to be nowadays with NIL and transfer portal and all that stuff. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I assume Enos will follow him, you know, or however else, you know, that will happen. But it sucks because USF is in the toughest position, you could argue, in any program in the country because they're not going to be a high major program anytime soon. They're good enough to be a high major program. But just the way that it was, you know, if this was 10 years ago when USF was rolling in football with Flowers and whoever else, then maybe we'd be having a different conversation. But the whole conference realignment stuff started when they were awful in football. And because of that, they're stuck right now. They're stuck with a really good athletic program that is going to keep losing super talented coaches because they are going to go get that super high major job.
I like that, man. I'm right there with you. And unfortunately, I think it's a tough pill to swallow. It really is. At the end of the day, you know, money talks.
Money does. So you're exactly right.
Until we, you know, move up with the big dogs, we're just going to be seen like that. Just because then on top of that, I mean, it's just, you know, it doesn't matter how amazing this team did in the American Conference and all that. You know, I feel like, you know, we knew this day was bound to come against a really good team. You know what I'm saying? Let me just get to my point, which is, you know, we could say the same thing about like Tulane's football team. Wow, what a great season. You know, they made it. They were the conference champions or whatever. But then, you know, they go against, you know, another conference, you know, big dog, and they get run over. So that's just part of the game. You know what I'm saying? So until we have that, until we have continuity or longevity, yeah, we're just going to end up being, this is, I think, maybe our peak, you know?
And I don't even know if it's necessarily continuity. It's USF's in the American. I mean, that's what it is.
Right.
And the American is probably the best non-power conference in the entire country. But guess what? It's not the Big Ten, and it's not
exactly. Oh, that's what I'm saying. So yeah, I mean, we need. There's not going to be any sort of continuity if we're not in one of those bigger conferences.
And the big question is, how does USF get into one of those big conferences? And I don't see the way that they do, honestly. Like, USF is a better athletic program right now than UCF. But guess what? UCF was at their all-time high when conference expansion started. And if that was reversed, if we're 5 years, 4 years ago, then USF would be in this conference, in the Big 12 like UCF is right now. And it's tough. It really is because the USF athletic department was bad when it mattered most. And now they're about as well-run as any athletic department in the country. And, you know, that speaks to the people that the people in it. But it's unfortunate because there's always going to be the bigger job, you know, and it's unfortunate, man. It is really, really unfortunate. But you also look at some of these coaches that are, for example, like the North Carolina job is open, and you're like, okay, like they want Lloyd from Arizona. Arizona's going to win the national championship, and you know, you're talking about that a guy might leave that to go to another school. So it's not just a USF problem, but it's hard to stomach for fans. But let's talk about who they hired, because I like their hire. I do. I don't love it. I like it. And they bring in Chris Mack, who is the 13th head coach of the Bulls. And he has a career record of 323 and 153, 12 seasons of 20-plus wins under his belt. You'll know him best for bringing Xavier to a one seed, which is pretty insane that Xavier was ever a one seed. And then, obviously, he was the coach at Louisville, and he had number one rankings in the national polls at both of those schools. He was most recently at the College of Charleston, where he had back-to-back 21 seasons, the 2016 National Coach of the Year, and is known for elite roster building through the portal, which is huge in this era. Do you like the hire? What's your feeling? You know, that he has huge shoes to fill, in this USF Bulls program.
Yeah, he's got huge shoes to fill. I like it. I mean, I don't see why, you know, there would be some, you know, really big reason for me to, you know, love it. I'm excited. I'm optimistic, Jonathan. Mm-hmm. You know, what I think is different about him compared to Hodson is he's been in the game a lot longer. You know what I'm saying? So now he's, you know, he was high, and then now I don't want to say he was low with College of Charleston, but you know what I'm saying? It's, you know, it's a little different when you're going from, you know, Louisville, Xavier down to College of Charleston. But now, you know, he's wanting another, you know, better opportunity now with USF. He's got that experience. And I think that's what I like was, you know, it was good to know that he has that, you know, he's, you know, got that elite recruiting experience. So I don't know, man. I think we're going to have to do something real special if we want to be like a national contender or something. But I feel like, if you ask me, and I feel like we've already been talking about it now during this episode, is perhaps USF is just going to remain like a mid-major success story.
Yeah. I mean, what's my big thing is like, okay, like what's the expectation? Is the expectation for USF to turn into the next Gonzaga? Look, you need major donor funding and a major collective and NIL to do that. Because everyone wants to go to school in Tampa. Tampa Bay is one of the best areas in the country. Maybe I'm biased, obviously. I've lived here my whole life. But there's no place better. You don't have to worry about winter. You're at a beautiful campus. You know, you're in Florida, obviously. And so it's all about the investment. If USF had the roster, and if you go tell these portal guys, hey, we'll give you $2 million. It's going to be the starting point guard at USF. They'd come. They would. And, you know, could they be the next Gonzaga? Like, I don't think that they can. And is it possible? Yes. Is it likely? No. Because Mark Few was an outlier, because Gonzaga was a no-name program 28 years ago until they ironically beat Florida in the tournament and, you know, went on a little run, and then they made the Sweet 16 for like 16 straight years or whatever it was. And they were able to beat up on the West Coast Conference. I mean, the American is better than the West Coast Conference. Not this year, but you know, if you look at the middle of the American, the middle of the West Coast Conference, it's similar. But yeah, I mean, until USF starts, you know, spending like a high major team, then no. That, and I hate that that's the conversation in basketball right now. Like the fact that we're even talking about, yeah, you to be competitive, like, you know, unless you're Iowa and have one of the best coaches in the country, like you need NBA players. If you look who's still in right now, like who won yesterday, Iowa has Bennett Sturge, who's going to be a top 15 pick. Arizona has Burries, Pete, you name it. They have five NBA draft picks on their roster. You look at Illinois, who has Keaton Wagler, who's going to be a top 15 pick. You know, and you just go through. It's like you need those high-level NBA guys to compete. You look at Florida, who won the national championship last year. Their entire backcourt is playing in the NBA right now, you know? And you look at Houston, who played against them, and LJ Cryer is in the NBA right now. And I'm talking about, obviously, the highest of highest levels, but you know, I feel like USF fans deserve that a little bit, you know, but obviously money's a huge thing. USF.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, speaking of money, I mean, what's the situation? What do you think is the situation with USF and NIL? I mean, obviously we're not going to have the big bucks like a lot of these institutions. So, yeah, what do you think is going to go on with the transfer portal? Because I feel like
great question.
The transfer portal this year for football was maybe, in my opinion, the first year that, you know, it was like, whoa, there's a whole lot of transfers or, you know, a whole lot going on. Yeah. And I wonder if that's going to be the same thing for college basketball.
Oh, for sure. It will. USF will probably have 9 new guys next year from the portal, at least, especially with the new coaching change at a mid-major. And unfortunately, like, maybe not unfortunately, the way you look at it, football's king. The most of the spending is always going to go to football because football is the highest revenue sport, especially when USF opens up the new stadium where and that stuff, you know, hopefully. And hopefully with building that new stadium, then that money can start to trickle down to other sports. And, you know, it's tough saying this on a podcast where we talk all USF sports, but if you're not football or basketball, unless it is rare cases like UConn women's basketball or Vanderbilt baseball, or LSU baseball, it's not that you're irrelevant in the grand scheme of things, but you really are because you're a non-revenue sport. So in that, you really have to look and it's like, okay, How much do we want to invest? USF brought in some high-level transfers. I bet you Pup Howard was not overly cheap to get, you know, the linebacker from Florida that came to USF. So I just know for a fact, you know, Florida's roster was $13 million this year, and they were a one seed, you know? So can USF get to 4 million, 5, 6, 8, whatever that number is to be competitive? I don't know what the average, you know, roster in the American was, but you can spend money on all these guys. Look at Memphis, right? And if you don't have the right guy to cultivate that, to cultivate that roster and bring in the right guys, then it's irrelevant and you're going to finish fifth in the American. So I don't have the recipe, but it starts with, you know, it honestly starts with football continuing to do well. And then the rest kind of trickles down.
Yeah. I was thinking at least as of right now, it's going to be at least only you got to pick and choose. And I think, you know, if you're USF or something, if you're Rob Higgins, I maybe that's what I should say. If you're Rob Higgins, you got to pick and choose. You're going to lean on prioritizing USF football a little bit more. Rightfully so, you know.
Football
both are, you know, thriving. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, man, we're going to do the best we can with what we have. I think that's what you have to give credit to. And I feel like people are respecting USF more and more.
For sure.
I did see, I think, three different people, not anything USF related, just, you know, giving a shout out to USF's basketball team. I saw it on Instagram, where I even saw someone like, I think one of these big analysts said like four teams I'd like to actually, you know, surprise everyone.
Yeah.
It was like Akron, and then there was USF. I remember I saw that one. So,
yeah
man.
The hopefully, goal for USF, you know, we every we year in basketball cool things. Should be to make the tournament. Like, that should be the goal. Now that you've kind of tasted and had a roster this good. And one of the questions is like, you know, does bringing in Chris Mack signal that USF is committed to basketball? Yes, it does. A guy that brought Xavier to a one seed, no one even knows where Xavier is in the country. I get that they're in the Big East or whatever. Like, that is huge, huge. Xavier hasn't been relevant since he's left. And obviously went to Louisville, stuff kind of flamed out there, but this is a big hire, you know. That this is a big hire, and look, he has not had, you know, the College of Charleston wasn't crazy competitive this year in terms of making the NCAA tournament, but you know, you come to USF, you get some more talent, and you know, this can definitely be a guy that can bring you there again.
Absolutely, I like it, man.
All right, well, let's move on, because that is not only the only coaching change in USF basketball recently. As we were going to go to Christy Curry, who is officially the new leader of the USF women's basketball, bringing in massive SEC and Big Ten experience. Obviously, spent the last 13 years at Alabama, 5 NCAA tournament appearances in the last 6 years. She's a big game coach. She took Purdue all the way to the national championship back in 2001. She's a member of Elite Club, but she's only 10 coaches in history to record 100-plus wins at 3 different programs. So, this was a big swing. This was. I mean, talk about USF being committed to winning in multiple sports. I mean, what was your take on the hire?
I like it a lot, dude. After seeing the resume, I mean, dude, Christy Curry's the real deal, man. I mean, just, you know, even what she did, she took Purdue all the way to the national championship back in 2001. Experience. I mean, she has been in the game for a long time now. So, she's had 16 seasons of 20-plus wins, 21 total postseason appearances. 5 WNBA draft picks under her belt. So the good thing is that, you know, she's going to be taking over a Bulls program that, you know, already has a very solid foundation. You know what I'm saying? So I think this is definitely a statement hire, if you ask me. But I wanted to ask you, what's the situation with Michelle Baxter Woods? What do you think was going on with this? Because from what I was reading, I know, you know, that she wasn't taken into consideration, but what do you think made them not go in-house and decide to go for someone like Christy Curry? I mean, you honestly couldn't go wrong with either.
I wonder
if the case was, you know, one year of head coach versus many years, you know.
I agree.
And it was under Jose
wanting to be relevant. You know, USF made the tournament 2 years ago. You know, they were relevant and competitive this year, but not in the national kind of scheme of things. And that's what the hire is all about. It doesn't mean the previous coach wasn't a great coach, did a great job this year. But you're talking about a coach that is has multiple, I mean, what, 20 years of high major experience, almost 25 years of high major experience in coaching. I mean, that's huge. That's huge. And then in this day and age, you have to be able to coach in the new era. So that's something I worry about with Mac. That's something we're about here. Will they be able to kind of be able to coach in this new era that we're in? And, you know, that's to be seen, but it's a swing that I like because it shows that, look, we're not going to settle. And not that if they were to keep the coach that was here, that's necessarily a settle, but this shows like, look, we're going out headhunting and we're going out to get someone because the main goal here is to be as competitive as we can for as long as we can. So that's really what I think the hire signifies because, you know, why settle to be, I think, what, they finished third or fourth in the American this year when you could finish first every year? And not only that, you have to think, okay, who could she bring, right? Is she going to bring high major talent to USF? You know, and that's something that everyone kind of thinks about when you see, okay, USF hires Alabama coach. So I'll be really interested to see how it worked out. Obviously, the athletic director has been super busy having to make three pretty big time hires, as obviously the football, men's and women's basketball leave. And you could argue, you know, those are three of the five most important sports, important, you know, popular, whatever you want to say, sports in the program. So, I mean, it's been wild. But been a wild, wild, wild ride. So, as Musab kind of disappeared as we are working through that, as well as he messaged me, as it just kicked him out for some reason. But we will carry on as we're back. There we go. I'm glad you reappeared.
All right. Yeah, I'm back, folks. Sorry about that. You know, just good old technology throwing.
There we go.
But, it was my way.
Yeah, it was basically just wrapping up your question, wrapping up the talk on. I was talking about how busy has the new athletic director been? I mean, you could argue football is the biggest sport. Men's basketball.
New hires after hires, especially three of the biggest ones, dude. We got three fresh new coaches. You know, I didn't think about that, but.
What you think? Football, basketball, baseball, then probably women's basketball in terms of.
Yeah.
I don't want to say importance, but in terms of. Now you know
why Rob Higgins has a job.
Yeah,
someone's got to be. Oh my gosh, yeah. There's a whole lot to oversee now more than ever.
Yeah, I know. I mean, he was just thrown right into the fire, to say the very least. But we will move on. Let's talk about baseball. As USF handles business against Rice 7-2 to clinch the opening conference series. Currently, they're sitting at the top of the American Conference with a 24 overall record. Nice. Musab, if you want to talk about what you saw with the baseball team and, you know, kind of what they've been up to so far.
Yeah, man. No, for sure. Dude, some great stuff going right now with our baseball team. First of all, shout out Nathan Early, X-Factor, in our first game against, Rice. Two-run homer, ground run rule double to finish with three RBIs, and then Eli Thomas – he also went off at the plate, coming through with a clutch triple and a double to drive in two runs. Caden Smith also got a little win on the mound. He only held the Owls just a one hit over 4.2 innings, some of that solid relief work. So, dude, in case you don't know, slash to all of our listeners, this team is virtually like unbeatable at home this year. We are 17-2 at home. So, crazy. Yeah, man, it's some great stuff going on, and we got some American Athletic Conference honors going on as well, Jonathan.
Yeah, they really do. As freshman Michael Sine is on a tear, as you kind of talked about how good this team has been. American Conference Pitcher of the Week for the second straight time, and you know, obviously, when I think USF baseball, I think of Shane McClanahan and the talent that has kind of come out of there. So good to see that the pitching is staying strong. He was one out away from a complete game shutout against Rice, had 9 strikeouts, only 3 hits, as Perfect Game officially named him the top pitcher for Saturdays. He's still undefeated with a 4-0 record on the mound. as they're climbing the national rankings as they're currently 23rd in the country. I mean, what an athletic department, man. What a year. It couldn't really go any better so far for the Bulls, as Earley got some love too, earning all conference honorable mention after stacking up 4 hits and 6 RBIs over this next week. But who do they have coming up next, Musab?
Yeah, they got a midweek clash with FGCU, Florida Gulf Coast University. So you know they got that they kept the the momentum rolling with the little 7-3 midweek victory. Now they are 21-4 and have the top spot in the American Athletic Conference. Wanted to give a shout out to Eli Thomas. You know, he's been on fire at the plate. He racked up 2 hits, 2 RBIs. And then we had a massive 6-inning explosion. We, dug in 6 runs, on the FGCU Eagles, basically putting it out of reach. And Jonah Sarabia, he locked in his first win of the season, while Ethan Sutton shut the door for his 5th save of the year. So, yeah, defense was on fire, especially towards the end of that game, turning 3 double plays to kill any sort of, FGCU momentum going on. So, yeah, man, dude, our team's on fire, man. I'm excited to see, how we keep on doing. And being that, we are, 23rd in the country, according to Perfect Game, it excites me to know that we're going to have the opportunity in the future to go against the big dogs. But before we do any of that, I know we have a little away trip going on, right, Jonathan?
Yep, they'll head up to Charlotte as they pack the bags for the first time. USF, enters this weekend, as we talked about. Top spot in the American Conference, ranked for the first time this year, as Michael Sene will take the mound, as the offense will look to stay hot, as they have a run differential of over 100. That means they're plus 100 in currently runs versus their opponents. They've just been on a tear. As make sure you also keep an eye on the base paths. Jevon Relaford, a menace, ranking top 20 nationally with 17 stolen bases. Little Chandler Simpson-esque right there. As the series history is a dead heat at 4 wins apiece so far, a battle for the all-time lead. Look out for the long ball, because the Bulls are a perfect 9-0 this year when games where they launch at least one home run. So eager to see how the Bulls look in their first away series of the season. As we will just jump right into softball, as again, USF just shows how complete they are in all sports, as softball's on fire after a 9-1 run rule win over FGCU in 6 innings to push their winning streak to 8. Say that one more time. 8 games, as Denai Brooks was the player of the game. Season high, 4 RBIs, going 2-for-3 at the plate. Bella Sardaja locked down her 5th win of the year after coming in for 4 innings of relief, as the bats were also fantastic. Multiple multi-hit performances. Alex Wilkes, Alexa Galangia, and Torin Fulton and Brooks. As Wilkes and Kathy Garcia Soto both kept their momentum going by extending their respective hitting and on-base streak, as this win moves them to 24-8 overall, as they will also head on the road for a big series against Tulsa. As Musabi, you want to talk about that one?
Yeah, man. Dude, we have been on fire. Yeah, a little fun fact. When we get this offensive moving, when we get 3 or more runs, we are undefeated. We are 23-0 this year when we score 3 or more runs. So just a little fun fact for y'all listeners. But yeah, man, we got a nice little win against Tulsa. We've been on a tear, dude. Extending now our winning streak to 9 games, taking down Tulsa 6-4 in a series opener. Shout out to Alex Wilkes. She is a problem for opposing pitchers. Leading the team in her 8th home run of the year. Alexa Galigani, again, clutch at the plate. She put up her own 2-hit performance, driving in a key run just to keep that pressure on throughout the game. And then Carly Ernst, she came in, shut the door. She threw 5 scoreless innings of relief to secure her 4th win of the season. So the Bulls, as of right now, folks, this softball team is on a perfect 7-0 in conference play, which is their best league start in over a decade. So talk about history, man. Dude, it's just history on history on history with this USF Athletics program this year, dude. Consistency is the name of the game right now, all right? Because with Wilkes, Galigani, and Kathy Garcia Soto all extending their multi-game hitting streaks. So again, the same thing with the whole three-run rule. Now, instead of 23-0, we are 24-0, folks. But sometimes, you know, every story has to, or every beautiful story has to come to an ending. Jonathan, go ahead and rip off the Band-Aid for our listeners.
Yeah, the win streak came to an end as they shut out, as you talked about, the three runs. They shut out the Bulls 15-0 in only five innings. A tough day for everyone as the pitching staff kind of imploded as Tulsa had 12 hits, three home runs just across four innings as Wilkes was only bright spot hitting double to extend her own hitting streak as well. But despite the blowout, they're still in a great spot in conference with a 7-1 record. It's just like softball, baseball. Any given day, anything crazy can happen. You know,
it happens.
The blowout. You know, it is what it is. But a big time series coming up next as they play Wichita State, as both teams are fighting for a position atop of the American Conference. As USF currently is 7-2, as North Texas they're just behind North Texas, while Wichita State is 6-3. So a big time series here, as the all time matchup is also dead even at 13-13-1. As we look for Wilkes to continue to be the engine of this offense. But something really cool about this game is Sunday's series finale will be national spotlight on ESPNU at 4 or 5 p.m. for the annual Strikeout Cancer game. So that's just awesome stuff. Again, 4 or 5 p.m. if you're in the area, make sure you guys get down there. Super cool thing that USF softball is doing this year. And as we move on to tennis, Musab, USF continues to just to be a sports mecca right now.
Yeah, man, dude, our tennis team kept that momentum going on from their FAU sweep, taking down 71 ranked Liberty 4-1, and then they dominated. I mean, yeah, they dominated early in doubles. They got that 1-0 lead. Shout out to Hugo Carr and Ettore Danesi, you know, our dynamic duo right there. And then James Newton and Toto Lannis both picking up wins. And then in singles, Augustin Kuahler was, you know, he was a force on court three, man. He won his fourth straight match in straight sets to pull the Bulls in that commanding position. And then Gugi Verdesi, he was on fire as well, extending his own winning streak to four matches. And then Hugo Carr, the hero we know he is, you know, he battled through a tough match on court one to clinch the victory for South Florida. So this was, again, a nice little resume builder for the Bulls, you know, taking down a top 75 ranked opponent and defending it on home turf. So doesn't get easier from here. Now we're going to be hosting the heavy hitter Harvard Crimson. They're going to be coming down to town this Sunday. So yeah, we're going to be protecting home court. You know, nice to know we got that. 71 ranked Liberty, you know, win. We got to play them again one more time. And then after that, we'll get Harvard. So should be a good one just because currently the series is 1-1. So this will be a little tiebreaker for us. Slash, you know, it's just always cool to see us playing like teams way out of conference. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? You know, look, it's cool to see us, you know, play against, you know, Florida and, you know, FSU as well. But now you're telling me Harvard is coming down to our house. Mm-hmm. So that's cool, man. Just because, you know, it's Harvard. I know it's, you know, their athletics are not their academics, but it's cool. You know, they got a little history of their own. But on the women's side, we talked about their little road trip last week to South Carolina. Unfortunately, it was rather rough for the gals. They lost 4-1 to Coastal Carolina and then 4-3. It is what it is, but on to better things. But I wanted to give a shout out to Emily Jukarova, or Jukarova. She was a standout performer of the trip. She was undefeated in her singles match, it was just dominant wins as well. And then the doubles pairing with Jukarova and Josephine Foster shows some serious chemistry. They got a little 6-3 win against Coastal Carolina. Against College of Charleston, Melissa Sendley and Luana Vargas, they both stepped up with straight set single wins, got that 2-1 lead, and then the match against against the Cougars with Francesca Miglio was a little close but no cookie, you know, came down to the absolute wire. So despite the losses, you know, we pushed, you know, Charleston to a 3-3 tie before the final point was decided. So now we are going to be back in Tampa. We're going to be hosting Brown, a little bit of that Ivy League action going on here. First Harvard. Now we got Brown coming down. But this upcoming Monday, it's going to be senior night. You know, so shout out to our seniors, Durrani Nuroshan and Melissa Sendley. Correction, it was actually this past Sunday, not this upcoming Sunday. I wanted to, you know, sorry about that. So it was a close battle, but we took a loss, Jonathan. Melissa Sendley went out in style on her big day. She crushed her opponent with a 6-0, 6-1 victory. Sienna Leeson was a force to be reckoned with. And then Margarita Marcon as well. Emily Drukarova, she shows some serious ice in her veins coming out on top of a 10-8 super tie break on court six to grab that Bulls third point. But it was a game of inches with Margarita Marcon and Josephine Falster. They pushed their matches to three sets, but Brown managed to pull away. So, yeah, we don't have too much time to, you know, dwell on this, as we're going to be hosting Wichita State at 6 o'clock, or as I should be saying, as we speak, since it's, 7 o'clock. So, yeah, they should be wrapping up soon. Excited to talk about hopefully an upcoming win. But, yeah, man, we got some beach volleyball action starting soon. Jonathan, you want to tell us about that?
Yeah, I mean, they have won 8 in a row. I mean, just absolutely cleaning up right now. You know, they're going to play Sam Houston, followed by afternoon game against UTEP. And then tomorrow at 10:30, Sacramento State, in the morning, they play UAB at 1. So their coach is, you know, really got them going in their first home stretch as members of this Conference USA. So this weekend's a big opportunity for them to kind of protect their quote-unquote home sand against a mix of from everywhere. So beach volleyball continues to do their thing as track also kicked off the outdoor season with a massive showing at USF's Alumni Invitational, building off the momentum of the men's fifth consecutive AAC indoor event as Jilla Kroll stole the show, blazing 10.14 in the 100 meter. I mean, that's huge. He was American Conference track athlete, men's track athlete of the week, as the distance girl always did, also did really well with steeplechase Andrew Marcello at what came in first. Delaney Stevens and Carolina Urban also secured the 1-2 finish for the woman, as Kareem Belmadi proved he's still the guy to beat in the half mile of 800, capturing first place time at 1 minute 48 seconds. That is very, very fast. And the field events, Ella Dulce led the way, clearing in pole vaulting with clearing 3.7 meters. Again, that is very tall. So over 12 feet. That's awesome. As the meet served as a tribute to longtime assistant Don Marsh, who is in his 27th year specializing in the pole vault for the program.
27 years of pole
crazy,
vault.
Crazy, crazy, crazy. As the Bulls are setting up their sights on the biggest stages, the Florida Relays in Gainesville, April 3rd and 4th. So that is coming up next weekend, as some of the top podium finishes, as we talked about, Jalil Kroll, Baldami, and then Marcello and Stevens, who we all touched on. Just some really big time stuff. And lastly, we will touch on lacrosse, as the USF pulled off a historic upset, taking down number 21 JMU 9-7 in a massive conference statement win. The highest RPI win against a ranked opponent ever in the very young history of the Bulls lacrosse, as Grisette was the star of the game. 4 goals, including the dagger in the fourth quarter to steal.
Oh, yeah. If you don't know her name already, Elise Grisette, I know she's been player of the week, or attacker of the week, I think once or twice in the past.
Yeah. Musa, have anything to add as we wrap up here? As Musa, there we go. You're back.
No, man. Just, you know, I was just thinking throughout all this time as we were talking, you know, 5-10 years ago, you know, if I told someone about USF, I don't know if I'd be walking with my chest high. You know, and because I wouldn't blame them for not knowing USF.
Yeah.
But I feel like times have changed, Jonathan. Dude, the way our athletic program is making noise all across, dude, you know, just making history week after week, dude. I swear, It's like every single week there's something historic going on with this athletic program, whether it's our basketball team, baseball, lax, you know, track, always something going on. So no, man, that's all I got on my end, man. I'm just so excited to be, you know, talking about some, upcoming USF, you know, wins next week. And, excited to have Carter back as well, the iconic trio too.
Exactly. That's what I like to hear. So if you guys made it this far, please leave a like, comment, and subscribe wherever you may be watching, listening, anything in between. For Musab and myself, Jonathan Shields, thank you guys so much for watching, and we'll see you guys next week.
Go Bulls.
Oh, I guess I just stopped my video. So I think we can just leave. Yeah, because I think Eureka said he would edit it. Yeah, post.
All right.
Okay. Well, good stuff. I'll see you next week.
Yeah. All right. Sounds good. I will. Yeah. I'm just going to give him a heads up.
All right. I got to get out and eat. My food's getting cold. My mom.
Oh, no worries, man. I'll leave you to it, man. Yeah. If you want to, I think, yeah, at this point, yeah.
Big fish fry. But
at this point, yeah, he can just, you know, cut out this part, of course. So, yeah man. Have a good rest of your night. Talk to you next week, dude.
See you next week. See ya.
Yep.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLR Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.